Hello and welcome to Between Two Cairns. I'm Yochai.
Hi, I'm Brad.
Hi, I'm Skullboy. I'm Sam.
And today we're going to review The Lost City. But first, how you doing, Sam? Welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Thanks for having me back. I was a little bit afraid that I was going to be replaced by Quinn because he was extremely charming and likable.
That's just the Britishness, you know. It's not fair.
I think he's also extremely charming. I watch a lot of British television, and he's just
not
charming.
All charming.
They're not all charming.
No, he's extremely
he's
charming.
A pro.
It was a great episode. I've been doing good. I played a show last night. That was fun. So I'm glad.
Were you rocking?
I was rocking and rolling. It was a good time.
You were rolling.
I did a little bit of rolling.
This is no more. Whoa. You're not in the Dalai and the Llamas anymore, right? This is some new
no,
band.
No. That was a high school band. No, this is a band that I've been in. My wife and I and our
don't say her parents. Yeah. If you said her parents, I would just hang up.
No. My wife and I and our best friend are in a band
awesome.
Together.
It's
that cool. her dad is in a band. He's like a jazz bass player.
Oh, that's
yeah,
much cooler.
Sweet.
Yeah,
it's much.
Hey,
yeah.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds really rocking, really rolling.
You got jazz in-laws too?
No, I'm just a jazz bassy man.
That's you play bass?
My thing is, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't know that. It's great.
I don't really want to talk about
that's
it.
Fine. We don't have to.
No, I've got my,
I played bass growing up. That was like my orchestra instrument was upright bass.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? This is a missing link to like why I like you. Like,
yeah,
we've got a little bit of like bass section vibes.
We're bass buddies.
Back in the orchestra, you know, the first violin over here is like trying to carry the melody. We're like, you'll go as fast as we'll tell you.
Wait a minute. Who were you?
Fewer of us.
Who are you just pointing at when you did that?
You.
I'm the first violin. I don't. Yeah. Okay.
First violin over here. Try harder. Okay.
Oh, the first violin that wishes he played viola. So confusing.
Yeah.
I know. What's that clef? Alto clef, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I've never. You definitely are. You do not have viola.
Or is it tenor clef?
Energy.
What is it? It's some goofy ass clef. No one knows what that is. Pick a lane, viola. You know.
I have a question for both of you. Have either of you ever considered getting a like musical note tattoo or a bass clef or something on you?
No.
I like 100 Gex.
Ooh.
Got giant musical note tattoos. What's his name? The dude from 100 Gex. Got like obscenely large musical note tattoos on his chest. And it looks so stupid. And that's like why he got it.
Yeah.
I just don't know how, if it's, isn't it when it gets too big, it's just too hard to tell what it actually is? Like you just see lines, or is it small enough that you can see it still?
It's
Dylan Brady. Look up Dylan Brady. I mean, it's on the cover of 10,000 Gex, I think. Let me see it.
Yeah, I don't think I have.
We're getting into the good stuff.
I don't think any of my tattoos are musically related.
Look up 10,000 Gex. Look at that obscenely large musical note tattoo on Dylan Brady's chest. That's a statement, man.
It's a statement for sure.
Dips into the navel.
Oof.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I mean, that's 100 Gex's whole vibe, though. Is that that's the response they're looking for.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Yeah, no, love
them. It's like a wishbone as well. All right. Anyways, moving on. Today,
what are we even doing here, guys? I'm low chi, you know, my chi's low.
You want us to, should we do like an activation exercise for you to get your chi up?
I need some activation.
Why don't you do a quick round of hot or not with me?
No, don't ask him to do it. No.
Now that's an idea.
No.
Look at how happy he just got. Look at how bright and chipper.
Time for America's fastest smile on his growing face. Game show.
God.
So hot or so not?
So hot, so not.
Yochai, are you ready?
Does it make any difference whether I say I'm ready or not?
Absolutely not.
It matters to me. I'm waiting for Yochai's response. I want to...
No, I don't have one. I just want you to get it over with.
All right. Maybe we'll do it a little bit later.
Yeah,
Yochai's not ready.
Spring it in the middle of something. That'll be good. He'll like that.
No, I don't want any of it. I just wanted to say that we were here for another Gamer Blast from the past where we review old modules and I make fun of them.
Roasts a module.
We don't make fun of them. I feel like we dive deep.
I said I was not trying to implicate you.
Oh, you make fun of them. Yeah. You got a real attitude problem.
I know. And you know what? This comes up a lot. Like, okay, I got kind of some, I was talking to some, call them OSR luminaries the other day. And,
here we go.
No. The reason I'm mentioning is because you'll understand my conflicting feelings is so over every like month or so, there is a new itch release or drive-through release or Reddit post about some guy's notes from when he was a kid turned into a module or some famous person's notes that were turned into a module.
Yeah.
And I cannot express how little I care about that. On the other hand, there's nothing wrong if you do care about that. There's not, if that's interesting to you, great. Uh-huh. And I was talking to these friends of mine and I was saying, hey, I don't care about this. Why do we need, like, for instance, I think I was able to list just off the top of my head, like 8 different books all about basically the same, like 4 or 5 dudes from Wisconsin. Why do we keep needing more of those books? Like more and more and more of those books all the time. And I'm not even going to waste my time listing them here. Just Google history of D&D books and you will see so many, and many of which came out just in the last couple of years.
There are a lot. I feel like it was like, it's like a, I don't want to say this lightly, but it feels a little cash grabby at this point.
You will sell the book. You will sell the book. And
it's the same stories. And like, I think it is just because there's like a certain amount of like mystery surrounding the like non-mystery of it. Does that make sense? There's like,
no,
it's not that there's like a lot there. It just feels like there's a lot there. I don't know.
Well, and also,
because like I've read a couple of them and I've listened to like stuff about it, and it's just like it's kind of interesting, but like I can't imagine like continuing. It's like, okay, we sort of know, right? Like we know all the stuff at this point.
So I understand why, from a design perspective, especially if you're an adventure writer or a rules writer or someone who gets really in the weeds, mechanically speaking, why this is interesting to you, understanding that the reasons for why things were done a certain way. I just don't care. I don't know if you noticed, but in this very module that we're going to review, which is from 1982.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great year.
There is a dex save, specifically a save under your dexterity score in here.
Yep.
And that's cool. I wonder if like, that's the first time it appeared in a published TSR module. I don't know this in this specific way, because I've seen it before where they'll say roll under, you know, a strength of 15 or some number. They'll make up some
I think it
rule.
Was Dragonlance, because we talked about this with Dragonlance, right?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't. This one is,
and
like,
that was later.
It is. This is mechanically identical to saving under dex for Into the Odd. Or whatever. It is what they describe here. I don't remember what exactly it was in that other module, but it wasn't exactly the same. It was like a strength score, saving under your strength, but it wasn't totally the same. Maybe they didn't use the word save. In this case, they do. And so I can understand why that's interesting. But man, the let's call it pushback I got after commenting that I just don't understand why people care. People care. Yeah. People are interested in this stuff. And
I think it's like religion, not religion, but like it's like lore. It's like real life lore about stuff, and like I don't know, there's little things that like I think are helpful contextually to understand. Sure. Like for instance, knowing that Gary Gygax was an insurance
broker writer.
Yeah. He writes like someone who writes for insurance. Like that's it's all like value assessment of
right. Ropes. I mean, comparing him to Tom Moldvay. I'll read anything Tom Mulvey writes in terms of terseness compared to Gary Gygax. So I understand. I'm just saying there is a general feeling of interest in the early days of D&D specifically that will never make sense to me. On the other hand, it is fun to poke fun at these old modules and to find the cool stuff in them. I am very curious to see what the reaction is to this module, because it's so beloved. People really like it. And I don't, well, you know what? I don't want to give away my opinion.
Yeah, let's.
I just think you're flying. You know, I feel like there's like an effect when something seems marketed for you, but yet something is, for whatever reason, you decide you don't like it. I feel like there's some kind of like tension there. Like you're, you know, like all the books about Gary Gygax, like you, if, you know, in a sense, you should like that. You're in the demographic to like that. You like the history of RPGs. Why wouldn't you like that? And yet you don't, you know what I mean? I feel like that's just, that's like a very normal feeling, you know, to have.
Yeah, there's
like a lot of my neighbors are really into, like there's a Portland soccer team, the Timbers, you know?
Yeah.
And it annoys me. Like, I should like this. I should like that. I live in Portland. I sometimes like organized sports. I like being involved in the things that my neighbors like, you know? It's like, I should like this. But it's like, I don't know why I don't like it, and I resent it when I am forced to look at Timbers stuff. I'm just like, you guys in your scarves, and like, you're always wearing green, and like, what? Like, this is stupid to me. Like, I feel like overwhelmingly... like an imbalanced amount of dislike against it when I have no reason to, you know what I mean? I just feel like it's so close to something that I should like, and yet something's there that doubles down on me not liking it, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get this feeling. I don't have an example, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Uh-huh. There's just like a gut, like, ugh, get it away from me.
Right, you know, and I, like, if I just had, you know, if I had, like, a certain friend that would, like, get me in there, maybe I would like it. You know, if, like, things were a little different, you know, if I had, you know, gotten hit by a car when I was a kid and my life had changed, you know, maybe in a different timeline, I love the Timbers. You know, I'm so close. Whatever. I'm not, and there's a thunderstorm there. So I feel like you have got... a thunderstorm of dislike.
But on the same token, I feel like I'm being unfair. I feel like I am not... Uh-huh. Like, who cares that other people like it? Let them like it, you know? And yeah, so that's kind of my takeaway is, like, I mean, you know, this is just me being in the minority, and that doesn't make me special or better. It just means I don't like this thing, and I'm trying to examine why. And, you know, the answer probably isn't very interesting to anybody else. So
I have a little theory about this. It involves like social media and the way that we engage with topics because of social media. And I think that sometimes there is like an undue amount of pressure to have an opinion about something that you like don't really care about. And that sometimes
that's true.
Like pushes you into this place of like, okay, well, my opinion is I don't like it. Like, and here's all the reasons why. And like, I'm not saying that's necessarily what's happening with you, but I know I have had moments where it's just like catching myself being like, I don't need to have an opinion about this because I don't need to have an opinion about everything because I'm not a newscaster. I'm just like a guy. And like, it's fine to just like be a person that like exists in the world without having an opinion on like every single thing. And it's one of the reasons that makes the internet sort of an insufferable place to be because everybody thinks that they're like being interviewed by CNN every time they say anything. And annoying. It makes you annoying to do that instead of just like, I don't know, hanging out and doing whatever we're doing.
Right. Yeah. Like Taylor Swift is fine. You
know, like
you don't
whatever.
Have to
yeah. It doesn't, matter.
Let her do her thing.
Yeah. Like she just, it affects me zero.
Okay. Okay.
It's fine.
Unless I'm the environment and her private jet. Huh.
That's, I've got an opinion about that. I've got an opinion about that.
One of the podcasts that I listen to is it used to be called Intelligence Squared. Now it's called Open to Debate. And it's Oxford-style debates hosted by John Donvan. And the most recent episode is, does Taylor Swift deserve her billion-dollar fortune? So they have a team of ethicists.
Deserve is tough. I don't know.
Does any billionaire deserve $1 billion?
Right. Arguing yes, she does, is a political philosopher and chair in ethics and democratic values at the University of Richmond. And arguing no is the chair of ethics and institutions at Utrecht University's Ethics Institute.
That's really interesting. I would listen to that.
Okay, but like what is the target audience for this? It's not me.
Right.
Okay.
There is a mixing of genres of stuff. happening.
Yeah, I don't. There. I don't.
Which, like, well, I tend to be drawn to that kind of stuff. I'll be honest.
Well, okay. I listened to the intro, and according to the host, the reason for the debate is because she is the first artist to have made $1 billion without endorsements, like without making deals or whatever. It's just off of her music, basically, without, like, you know, signing some kind of food endorsement. Right. I don't know.
Pepsi,
yeah, exactly.
This, Pepsi didn't give her $1 billion.
I think her marketing is the thing that is to be studied, because, like, whoever convinced everybody that she's, like, the one is, like, a very, very good
job. They did a good job. They did a very good job.
I feel like right now, though, this is apex Taylor Swift. Like, now is the time to sell your Taylor Swift stock. We are due for, like,
the heel turn is coming, baby.
Yes. Like, the sword of Damocles is about to fall.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Mark my words. This time next year.
I don't know. Beyonce
people
has
are going
been,
to be turning.
Beyonce has been at that same point, and it just keeps going for her.
But she's not in the, I wouldn't say Beyonce is at this point in, like, cultural consciousness the same way she's been deified and sort of like,
exactly. She's a deity. But, like, she is, it's like, I remember watching an interview with John Oliver where he was talking about, there was a photograph of everyone who was involved in The Lion King. And I remember seeing the photograph, and it was all the actors and then Beyonce. And I remember thinking, that's so interesting. Like, you just don't see her with other people. And then John Oliver in this interview said she wasn't there. They marked the ground where she later would appear so she could have her photo taken separate from everyone else. And like, that's the level of deification she is at, where she is what we compare, she is, you know, the Meryl Streep or the greatest of all time of any artist. So it's an artist that I don't like. So
yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, deification, like, we were talking about, like, you know, religion in role-playing games in the Cairns Discord server. And I feel like this is, like, an angle that you can take of, like, you know, just the party member that ascends to godhood. Like, you know, she was in a three person dungeon delving group for a while and, you know, just sort of, she did like a solo delve at one point and found, like, a lot of treasure and then just, like, blew up from there. So, you know, these things happen.
I don't know. There are seeds of godhood even at an early, I remember
she's 19, very, very good voice
or something. I was in my friend's car and I picked up a CD and he was like, oh, that's my sister's CD. And I'm like, yeah, okay, dude. And I'm like, Destiny's Child. And I'm like, looking at the cover, I'm like, who are these people? And I read the liner notes. I'm like, whoa, this lady's name is Beyonce. And
And that was when you still heard her last
Destiny's Child record. I was like, whoa, this is someone. Like, I don't know. Just something was there.
There was a girl in my son's the daycare he went to before the pandemic. There was a little girl named Beyonce in that school.
Oh, man. You cannot name a kid Beyonce. Come on.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's amazing because this is very, a very, very diverse school for this area. Uh-huh. We had a Beyonce, a lawyer, two Atticuses. What was the other? Prince, a prince.
Yeah.
But, like, that's like, amazing.
Great. You should name your kid Prince. You should not name your kid Beyonce.
It just reminds me of that the Key and Peele the college football skit where it's just like Harvard University.
Yeah.
DeVry University.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, I like that they actually used some real actors or real athletes with their real names because their names are just completely crazy.
Yeah, it's the best.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I saw someone quote tweeted something and I was like, this is directly from that Key and Peele sketch. This dude signed to some team. I don't know. I don't remember what. His name is the coldest to ever do it, Crawford.
That's incredible. Oh, man.
What a name. The coldest.
That's great.
That's
okay.
Going on my character sheet.
This is good. This is good.
Hey, I got an idea. What if we just have more unstructured chit chat for 10 more minutes and
call it a day?
Send this out as the after show and then start the real show. What do you think about that?
We could do that.
Wait, are you serious right now?
Yeah, why not? We're like 20 minutes into the complete nothing. We've been talking about Beyonce. And
do you want me just to cut out the parts where I say we're being...
Leave this in. Well,
all right. I'm down. I can do it.
You can call it like no. You can call it like a false start or something like that. Like that.
No, we'll just call it take two.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want me to stop recording or do you want to just keep going and I'll split it up later?
No, just keep going.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
What else is going on, Sam?
I know. Oh, right now. Let me think. I backed myself into a corner creatively because I've been working on this comic and I've been doing it like I'm doing a page a day really consistently for like many days. And I just hit a wall where I got other work building up and it was eating up my time. And now I'm like, I left everybody on like this serious cliffhanger. And hopefully by the time this episode comes out, it'll be resolved. But like now I really want to finish it so that I can have finished it. Cause then I want to go through and I got continuity stuff that I want to fix. And like, I want to redo all the text lines and stuff. Thank you. It's been really fun.
It feels like something special. Yeah, just put a tab in it, come back later. It's fine.
That's the thing. I'm very used to like the way that my projects work is like it's I think of it as like circling a drain. Death is the final end, but like in between that, it's just like I'm going around and like every once in a while you like hit like a like project that you were working on again, and it's just like I'm working on this now.
Right. Yeah.
You just got to like, surf the waves of your own influence. Otherwise,
carve the tubes of creativity, my bro.
You can't force it. If you try to force it, it's going to be bad.
No, you slice that nasty pow pow. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I'm talking.
What?
What does that mean? I know what you're talking. He's surfing over there.
Oh.
We're boarding and surfing and all sorts of extreme sports over here.
Okay. Okay.
We know lots of cool surf lingo. And we're going to keep saying it.
All right.
Yep, shredding the gnar.
All right. Here's the problem. This is the problem. So are we officially in after show territory now?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I took the wind out of my set. Do you guys want to still do a Mootsack question?
Nah, let's wrap up this after show and we'll start the real show.
Okay. All right. All right.
Then we can do a Mootsack question.
Well, so no one asks me how I'm doing.
Actually, how are you doing? Yeah. What's going on with you, hi?
I'm knee deep in second edition Kickstarter nonsense, and I recorded this like 4-hour long actual play that I need to edit, and I have gotten some great advice from my pals about making some of my adventures better. And mostly just writing. I spent like 3 hours yesterday trying to figure out what categories 80 monsters need to be in. Like categories like insectoids, magical, giants, you know. And the problem is I decided on these 80 monsters for my bestiary, for the one that goes in the book, not the separate one you can buy that has, you know, 100 and something. And and there's just not that many categories of monsters you can. Like you can taxonomize as much as you want, but like what category does a mimic go into? Is that magical or is it furniture? Like what, you know, is a Titan a giant?
That's a lore discussion really. Cause like, I remember I got into a pretty heated argument with somebody on Reddit one time when I posted a picture of a hill giant that was just a hill that was walking around. And he's like, that's an elemental. And I was like, you're a loser.
That's really funny.
Well, I organize my miniatures collections in the following way. We've got monstrous humanoids. Mm. We've got undead and we've got everything else. Actually, I think animals might have their own bag, but animals might be in the everything else bag. That's how
I explain why I had many is because I needed to make it rollable on a D20. It would have been much, much easier if it was any other dice size smaller than D20. But
I think I would do shapeshifters as a category.
So they do. They have one. They do. It includes werewolves.
Oh,
that's a weird way to think about things.
What? What? Why?
Like, define them by what they do and not what they look like. I think that's weird to me.
But what do lycanthropes look like, or what do other shapeshifters look like?
Yeah, you can't define them by what they look like because they inherently look like different stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'd put werewolves into like animal category because it looks like a wolf. And I'd put shapeshifters into like weird creeps because it's just like an et cetera weird creep.
But werewolves are shapeshifters.
But that's, see, okay, this is like my dresser versus my wife's dresser, okay? My dresser is like pants in one drawer, all right? Shirts in another drawer, right? And then socks and underwear in another drawer. Her drawers are organized by like what they're used for. So there's like, there's workout clothes and then there's work clothes. And it's like the function is over the form. And that's a very confusing way for me because when I'm like, hey, I'm going to put away some laundry and open up her drawers. And I'm like, I don't know what these pants functions are. They're just pants to me, you know? So to me, this is.
I like your wife's way of doing it, to be fair. I'm into the functionality thing. I'm a big, like, you know, Casey Neistat studio.
Yeah, well, she's a special lady, and, you know, she's got her own way of doing things, but I disagree with a lot of it fundamentally. The point is, though, I just think about stuff in a different way, and I don't think about a werewolf as being something that inherently is based on changing its shape. I think of it as like a wolfy looking little freak, even like a were mouse or whatever. It's still the same, like a mousy looking freak. It's like an animal. That's an animal to me.
You're approaching it visually though, as opposed to
I'm a visual, you know, there we go. I'm a very visual learner. I think Yochai, I think we all know you're tactile kinesthetic dog. I think we know that, right?
Correct. Yeah. You know? So the term for like werewolves, but of other species, you know, like you can turn in, like this very adventure that we were supposed to talk about today, The Lost City, it has fox shifters and rat shifters and stuff, were rats. You know, you can, saying werewolf sort of makes sense because were means man, right? And but how do you say like were species of all kinds? I looked it up. And the term is either zoanthrope or therianthrope, which are both terrible. So I just ignored it.
It's all thropes to me.
I've heard zoanthrope only through the lens of like furries talking about stuff.
Yeah.
So like lycanthrope is specifically, that's wolf?
Yeah, lycan is the Greek root. But where, that's a like, you know, old Anglo-Saxon. Like you used to say were man and whiff man for man or man and woman. You know, where is the man part of man, and man means human. So even saying like, you know, that's why folks who say like, oh, you know, we shouldn't use the term man to refer to men and women. It's like, well, originally that's not what it meant. It meant all humanity. And we would say with man and white and where man. But yeah, so there's just no good catch-all term in my opinion. Where touched. Yeah. I've seen where touched.
Werewolves are something that like, I get. I was, when I was a kid, I was like super obsessed with werewolves after I saw Lon Chaney's werewolf movie.
What is it?
Like,
which one is it? Did you say?
The Lon Chaney Jr.
The OG.
Like the original, like the Wolfman. The Universal Studios.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. With like the Wolfman. Where he's got like a beard. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically. And it's nice like haircut. The special effects is like it's just like
Teen Wolf.
He just looks like one of those. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I became super obsessed with it. I was a werewolf for Halloween for like 9 years after that. I also did Halloween like too long.
Yeah.
As like, that's just like something about me that maybe now everybody knows.
So you didn't stop at 13 or whatever?
No, I just loved it so much. And I think it was because I was like afraid to do theater, but I really liked dressing up and attending. And so it was just like this sort of day that it was allowed. And so even past the point where like other kids were doing it, I was like, I would also go to like a different city and like where my grandparents lived to trick or treat. So it like didn't matter.
Avoid the shame.
It was just like, that's just like, that was the tradition. And so it was just like, we just kept doing that. And so like, yeah, I never had like a, But, this was all to say that, I think werewolves are one of those sort of setting breaking things for me, like clerics are for a lot of people, where it's just like, you have to really build this into the lore for me to like, you know, go with it. So like aware all kinds of animals, like also doesn't necessarily work for me. I don't know. I have very complicated feelings about it is what I'm trying to say, but you can, continue what you were saying.
Oh, I was interested in the movie itself because for me, the biggest werewolf influence was the American Werewolf in London. And specifically, it scared me, even though it was kind of a comedy. There's like some scary transformation parts, and I had nightmares for years about werewolves after that. Like, it was a fascination for me.
Interesting. I still have never seen that movie. And even though it's like such a, it's like one of the hallmarks of the genre of werewolf.
What movie? I wasn't paying attention for a minute.
The American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, good practical effects with the transformation. That's a Tom Savini, right?
Very good. Yeah,
that's pretty sure.
But it was scary when his fingers grow long. Oh, yeah. I got that's scared.
Cool. Yeah, I just thought, I'm in it for those transformation scenes, man. That's it. You know, I just want the super cuts of guys transforming into werewolves. That's the price of admission for the werewolf movies.
I get scared. I find that the best one I've ever seen is in Le Pacte de Loup. Did you guys see that one? It is a French film, mm-hmm. and it's about werewolves, pack of wolves, or the pact, Brotherhood of the Wolf is how they translated it.
Remember, it had that very, millennium Matrix like sheen to it, like very stylish combat.
Oh,
right?
it is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Uh-huh. It's got Vince Cassell and Monica Bellucci. Big fans of both of them.
Nice.
Hello, nurse.
And really, it is ridiculous, though. It is so silly, and I could not be made today. It's just like something so of its time, which is, 20 years ago, but that has some pretty good werewolf stuff happening in it. That's all.
Check that out.
It's about this guy called Chevalier de Fronsac. And he's got this. Oh. He has.
I don't know what it is about French names. I just stopped paying attention as you start saying stuff in French. Sorry, French listeners.
Chevalier is a knight. It means he's a knight. But his friend is this Native American, and he's like has helper. Honestly, if it was done respectfully as a book, I think I would love it. But instead, it's really bad. It's really bad. I gotta say,
and it's done.
And I think the guy who plays the Native American is not. I think he's like Filipino or something. Anyways, that's the movie.
Great move.
Waste of my time.
When I was a kid, I was watching the Discovery Channel with my dad at one point, and there was a special about wolves on, and the guy that was narrating it was just like, sometimes when the wolves are making love, or mating, sorry, he didn't say making love. Sometimes when the wolves are mating, the male's penis becomes too engorged and he cannot get it out of the female's vagina. And my dad looks at me dead-eyed serious and is just like, that can happen with humans too. he's a practical joker.
That's okay. Okay.
This is so stupid. I can't believe how stupid this show is sometimes. It's so stupid.
What's even stupider is that we spent there before recording. We spent at least 20 minutes talking about video games. Just
talking about this could have been in this portion.
We should just start recording as soon as the call starts so we get that after show or post show.
Pre-show.
Yeah, right. Pre-show.
Yeah, we should really be starting a media empire.
Yeah, this is great. How am I going to edit this into any? Are we just keeping it as it is?
Uncut, raw, uncut, and uncensored.
No.
Well, the bad boys of the OSR, uncut, as you've never seen them.
Oh, he's starting. Do it, man.
This was the Between Two Cairns After Show. You've been listening to the three bad boys of the OSR, three beacons of ancient power, strength, intelligence, and emotion. Who's who? You decide. Three lone wolves who play by their own rules, and they let it all hang out. This was the Between Two Cairns After Show.